Hello, I'm John Chambers, and I want to welcome everyone to the Chambers Talk series, the podcast that we do with leaders around the world, both in business, technology, and government. Today, we have a really exciting agenda on one of the hottest topics going on in all of technology and all in business, and that really is about cybersecurity and the role that it plays in every board meeting is one of the top three issues that companies face. We've got three people that I believe in a big way, part of the JC2 portfolio, that have different expertise, and I look forward to a very healthy give and take on the ideas and key topics that hopefully our visitors will find both educational and interesting and entertaining. Today, I'm talking with Vijay, who is the co-founder and CEO of Pindrop, previously from Google, Siemens, IBM Research, Intel, patent holder multiple times over, great education from Georgia Tech, and a PhD in telecommunication security. Vijay, welcome.
Thank you for having me, John. Super excited.
It's going to be fun. Mike, who's the founder and CEO of Pervoro, CEO and co-founder of Calence before that, a top partner that was part of a Cisco alliance. He's on both advisory boards and other boards, professional distinctions, entrepreneur of the year finalist from Ernst & Young twice on it, and Ed Denson, business leader of the year in Arizona. Education, electrical engineering, Carnegie Mellon University as well. Bipul, chairman and co-founder and CEO of Rubrik. Bipul took a little while to decide whether he liked running companies, being a venture capital, a key part, et cetera, on it. And he's done all of those very, very well. You are a partner at Lightspeed, which has been one of the most successful VC companies over the last two decades. Before Lightspeed, Bloomberg Capital, board member Nutanix and Hootsuite, which you were a funding investor in both of those. Previous positions at Oracle, IBM, a patent holder as well. Education, I'm not sure I could keep up with you guys. I wouldn't even get into your schools if you went through. But electrical engineering from IIT and an MBA in finance from the Wharton School. So today we're going to have a lot of fun talking on these topics. But kind of as a warm-up question, I'd like for you to do the classic elevator pitch, which I encourage all leaders to be able to do about their company in terms of what is your company about? What is the differentiation you have versus your peers? And what attracted you to this industry? So kind of a warm-up question for each of the three of you. If I could start, Vijay, with you, and then we'll go Mike and then Bipul.
Absolutely, John. So Pindrop focuses on providing security, identity, and intelligence to voice. And the reason we're so focused on voice is because voice is quickly becoming the input interface of choice across a wide variety of applications between call centers, IoT and edge devices like cars, TVs, Alexas, Google Homes, and communication systems like the Zoom call we're on, every single mobile device. But ultimately, those devices are extremely compromised because there are lots of security attacks on voice. There are 90 voice attacks every single minute. And so what we do is we provide that security identity intelligence so that you don't have to remember the answer to stupid questions when you're trying to access your account. Or when you talk to a TV, you can just use your voice and it personalizes the entire recommendation to your voice and who you are. And so ultimately, we do that right now for 8 of the top 10 banks, 5 of the top 7 insurances, 3 of the top 5 healthcare providers, and some of the biggest lighthouse accounts on the IoT and mobile spaces. So that's who we are. In terms of what differentiates us, most cybersecurity startups are focused on the online or the mobile channel. We're very focused on voice because that's where we believe the future of the human race is going in terms of interfaces. And then ultimately, what attracted me to this industry is nowhere else can you fight against the bad guy, right? Like you get to wear your superhero cape and fight the good fight, especially when these bad guys are going after people's bank accounts or going after someone's retirement funds, or going after someone's entire life insurance. The fact that you can use technology to fight against that fight, it's actually one of Pindrop's core values, passion for the good fight. And so that's what attracts me to this industry.
You know, I like to look at each of these three companies and their real unique distinction. I think voice will become the primary interface to the Internet of Things. and it will combine security in the same part, much harder to spoof than anybody would have dreamed. Literally how you're going to run your automobile, start the engines, et cetera, in many ways. Vijay, it's exciting to have you with us today. Mike, you have the most secure phone in the world. Tell me about your company and tell me about how it's positioned and where you're going.
Sure. Thanks, John. So Provoro is focused on mobile security. And as you mentioned, we basically focused on that area because similar to voice, mobile phones are now the primary compute device on the planet, and they will be for the foreseeable future. And as a result, the bad guys have increased their focus on those platforms. So it's a big opportunity to help defend and secure those devices. And then what we did is that we basically built an edge-based high-security platform that is disguised as a phone case. And so you have to be able to fit into the mobile lifestyle. So we have a case that allows you to do a lot of innovative protections around the mobile phone on the edge that's integrated then with a cloud offering as well. That is really part of our differentiation, that very tightly coupled, tightly integrated hardware-software stack along with some partnerships with some of the mobile device OEMs allows us to do things like being the first ever device to enable a mobile phone into a secure government facility. It's never been able to be done before. And as part of a broader solution ecosystem, we can allow phones to be used by sensitive government agencies. In terms of motivation, I look, zoom out and I think about there's so much technology innovation out there. And if we can't secure it, as a society, we'll never be able to take advantage of what's being developed. And so that really inspires and motivates me and got me into security.
Yeah, just with the same type of differentiation for those people on the call, Mike has literally the only really secure platform in the industry and has players like Apple and Samsung and others that interface into it very effectively. In terms of the key government bits around the world, you literally are almost sole sourced in every one of them, which gives you an idea how far ahead you are in national defense and secure requirements. So again, just a leading edge platform that is amazing. Bipul, you've held multiple jobs, multiple directions. When I think about security, I think about first, how well is a company compared to its peers? Then I think about how do you prevent the attacks, or if the attacks occur, how do you shut them down as quickly as you can? And then by definition, some will be successful. How do you recover? You're in the recovery side of it, very uniquely positioned. You're a unicorn multiple times over for quite a while. Tell us about your organization, sir.
Thank you, John, for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. Rubrik is a data security company. Our mission is to secure world's data. If you think about the last 20, 30 years of cybersecurity industry, the industry has been focused on prevention and detection of attacks. But in spite of buying 20, 30 different tools and technology, the breaches are happening every day. You have in the news ransomware attack and other attacks. We are the other side of the cybersecurity coin. We are focused on data security to fundamentally drive resilience, cyber resilience, because if you can secure your data, you can secure your business. I got attracted to this industry because there was no data security strategy for many large enterprises. They only had backup and recovery, and our vision was to transform classic backup and recovery into a data security platform. We deliver our services through Rubrik Security Cloud, which secures all your data irrespective of the location.
I like it an awful lot. I'm going to move a little bit now, and I'll ask you to take us into a little bit of detail. We all understand, at least in concept, the biggest issues and key trends facing the cybersecurity industry. But maybe if I could ask Vijay for the one that you could take us into a little bit of depth that would benefit the listeners one level down, how you take that trend and educate us a little bit on it. And then it's all right, Mike, I'm going to ask you that same question.
Yeah, I think there's a few trends that, as we get into 2023 that are big in cybersecurity. One is IoT and the proliferation of IoT devices. You know, if you look at a Gartner report recently, they say by 2023, you're going to have like 43 billion IoT connected devices. And I remember reading, you know, Cisco was one of the original companies. They talked about the IoT connected world. And I remember way back when that number was like 3 billion. So, you know.
Now, don't go way back when. Remember, I'm very age sensitive on these things.
But even, you know, the funny thing is even 5 years back, in like 2018, the number was like, you know, 10 billion or something like that. And yes. So it's grown four times over the last 4 years. And ultimately, recently, I also saw that the world's population crossed 8 billion. So, you know, you almost have five devices for every human being. And that's creating a lot of issues because these IoT devices are a gateway to a lot of other important devices. And therefore, if you see a lot of the attacks, the data breach attacks, they actually access themselves through some simple device like a HVAC unit and things like that. And even though these IoT devices no longer come with default passwords, they ask the user to set the password. And we know over the last 30 years how well that's gone. So, you know, that's a big portion of, you know, cybersecurity investment. How do you make sure that as these devices proliferate, you keep them secure? The second trend is remote work and the fact that you add a complication to this that everyone is remote. And so you have people using all kinds of devices coming into, you know, their own personal devices, accessing sensitive information. And you have also the notion that there are remote workers who are then accessing sensitive information. Like in our own call center world, we oftentimes are brought in to secure which agent is accessing what kind of information, because traditionally you could have supervisors say, you're a call center agent, you can't get your mobile phone into the secure location. Now, they're actually giving their password and credentials to someone else, and they're holding 3-4 jobs. And so who's actually accessing your data is a big problem. And then the third, I'll quickly plug in, is artificial intelligence, right? Both for cybersecurity companies to improve their solutions, but also for the attackers. They're figuring out which systems to attack among the million devices that they've compromised, which ones have valuable information, all through things like machine learning. And so those are the three trends that in my mind, those are the three key cybersecurity trends that are changing the world that we live in.
Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks. And you know, I agree with all the points that Vijay raised, and there are so many trends that we could focus on, but you know, let me zoom out. One of the things I think about is the fact that it's a $1 trillion technology industry. So the attack surface is gargantuan. And that's one of the reasons why you hear this common trend of breaches. You know, they never seem to stop. And at any moment in time, it's hard enough to defend such a massive attack surface. But the business pressure is so high to come out with new products, new innovation, less expensive, faster time to market, that the rate of change on the attack surface is also high. So the combination of those two business dynamics result in this perpetual, never-ending security problem. And it really won't end, right? And I think with the current approaches. So that's one trend. Number two is nation states. So economic security underpins national security. And enterprises need to understand that, you know, the world's evolved and they face very sophisticated adversaries. Yes, you need to build the fence and the wall and have the data recovery capability to keep out the average attackers. But if you have IP worth protecting, there's a chance that there's some very sophisticated people coming after you. And so looking at those two things, the way I think about those trends is that you have to have a hardware anchor for true security to protect, because you basically have to say, we're going to have some things that won't change. And things like identity, authentication, cryptographic fundamental foundations, if you can put that in a secure hardware foundation and then lever other security surfaces on top of that, you can let high rate of change stuff occur on other parts of the attack surface. But the attackers, even if they can penetrate that, can never get to the root stuff of what really matters. So I think that is a macro trend, which you will see as things continue to evolve in the years ahead. Software-only security is critical. But you know, the really sophisticated guys can come in below application operating system kernel layer. And if they do that, they can bypass those protections. So you have to start with a hardware anchor.
Yeah, that was one of the things when I first got to know your company and you, Mike, you educated me very much on. I originally thought, well, we can do the security and software only. And boy, was I wrong. And it's got to be, you know, using my words, hardware at the foundation and then software on top of it to properly protect it. And it's something I think many security organizations in the enterprise and government underestimate why it has to be done that way. Bipul, you've reinvented your company. It's amazing to watch. And so this next question I think is very appropriate. What has changed most in the last 2 to 3 years in cybersecurity? And how did you adjust very much in terms of what you wanted Rubrix to do in terms of the direction that you've taken it? Because you've reinvented your company and candidly repositioned it in the cybersecurity space even stronger. Can you share with the audience what was the trend and other trends you see and how did you do this?
At the highest level, John, our thesis, which is actually proving out to be right, was that most of the organizations have already been infiltrated. And it's not the question of if, it's the question of when the attack would happen, because there is a foothold in most of the organization from multiple either state-sponsored actors or independent actors. And we recently did a Rubrix Zero Lab study, and we found that 98% of the leaders reported at least one cyber attack in their organization. So if you think about that scenario, this prevention and detection, which is needed, is not sufficient. So people have to really have a strategy of recovery remediation. And then the second piece is the volume, velocity, and variability of these attacks have gone beyond human comprehension. So you have to really think about applying machine learning and artificial intelligence to drive security intelligence. But where you apply these AI ML technologies, traditional cybersecurity industry has applied AI ML into syslog or access log or machine log, application log, which is the secondary, tertiary data to infer what is happening to the most important asset that enterprises have or any organization has, which is their core business data. What Rubrix is doing is applying machine learning, artificial intelligence directly to the core business asset, which is data, to derive security intelligence. So if you think about the two things, attacks are inevitable, so have to have a recovery remediation strategy. And then how do you do recovery remediation fast? How do you understand the risk, sensitivity of the content, and combine the two to have fast recovery, fast remediation, and continue to operate even while the breaches are happening around you? That's the core premise on which Rubrix platform is built. We assume that all else is compromised and you can only interact with your data with full authentication and data is always available. That has been the core thesis and core premise of our growth.
When you think about your comment earlier, Mike, and I'm going to refer back to it, rogue nation states or nation states in general, what is the way that, how do you see them evolving? And on the most basic element of all, which is our mobile communications, how do you see the ability to protect them? And then at the same time, as we found out, is once you protect something, also people can see where your phone is, which can make you a target physically or otherwise. How do you think about that and how do you get your head around it?
Yeah, John, it's a great question and it's an incredibly challenging problem. If you look at the most advanced nation states, they have some of the smartest people with near unlimited resources. So high budget, high sophistication attackers, and they often don't need to obey the rules. So they can, you know, do things in the supply chain and other things that, you know, cause problems. So I think first you have to be pragmatic and acknowledge the problem. And then the next thing is you have to break the problem down into a couple of different domains, because there is no single solution that is going to protect against that level of attacker. So what you need to do is say, hey, what is it that you're trying to protect against? So if you're protecting against voice communications, for example, well, there are, you know, in the United States, NIST and the NSA have, you know, published standards for, hey, this is what is required for certain levels of sensitive conversations, secret, top secret. Here are the cryptographic standards. Here's the cryptographic implementations. So you need to leverage, you know, sort of the best practices that are out there. And then you need to think about how do you apply those to your commercial devices like your smartphone. And of course, what you find is that the massive market for smartphones, one of the biggest industries in the world, they're primarily, at least initially, focused on consumers. And so they can't focus on that level of security for the average person because the cost of the device would go up too high. And so what you do is you create an ecosystem. So you take a platform like ours and you say, okay, I'm going to take a commercial mobile device, but I'm going to add certain things that allow you to secure comms to a much higher level of security for a user base against an adversary who may be targeting that particular data set. And then you can extend that to different areas of data. But you know, you've asked me to keep my comments brief, so I'll stop there with that sort of being the concept.
You guys have been amazing, by the way. I would have lost money if I were betting against you being on time and tight answers. It's an A+, and it just speaks to how all of you have developed very well as CEOs that I'm very proud to be a small part of. One of the most recent articles in Fortune talked about the cyber industry and our cyber responders being dramatically outnumbered and under tremendous pressure. What do we need to do to fix that? Either an availability of resources, the way we develop our products, how to respond to it, et cetera. A little bit of thoughts, Vijay?
Yeah, so I think, you know, this is where, right, like as you, if you are constantly trying to solve the problem by throwing more humans at it, it's a losing proposition. And so this is where, and I think, you know, we have a lot of folks here across the spectrum, right? All the way, if you look at the Lockheed Martin cyber kill chain, you need solutions all the way from reconnaissance, detecting reconnaissance activity on your network, all the way till once you've been breached, how do you recover and remediate, which is what Bipul so eloquently talked about. But ultimately, you have to pepper all of that with you know, the capabilities that you have right now and the advances that you have with machine learning and AI. The fact that you need more of these technologies to determine where to focus on, where is the threat landscape the biggest, and ultimately use all of that to determine, you know, even though you're getting so many signals telling you that this could potentially be an attack, which areas can you focus on in order to make sure that you get the biggest bang for the buck? And ultimately, you know, we're starting to see CISOs and cybersecurity leaders start to hold that those cybersecurity products on two capabilities. One, how automated are you? Do you require an army of people to roll out your solution and to determine, you know, when an attacker is attacking you? And two, how often are you right, right? Like when you say this is an attack, how often are you getting it right? And so those two things, I think, are going to be really, really important in this day and age where the attack surface is so large, as Mike talked about, and you have so many different places that you need to monitor.
Bipul, a little bit your thoughts in terms of how do we address this? Do we just need to make our products more complex themselves, but much simpler to install? Do the products need to come together and be a ecosystem of companies that work together so there's not human intervention at the chief security information officer role? And as an adjunct to that, when you talk to the CISOs in companies, what's forefront in their mind that they are losing sleep on, which is a nice way of saying, where do they feel the most exposed?
So top of mind for CISOs are talent and talent shortage, because they have to secure their organization and really drive visibility and fidelity of information to have full understanding of what's going on. And in this scenario, no product or technology can live in isolation. Things have to be integrated and automated. And each product can use machine learning, artificial intelligence behind the scene, but they have to drive highly correlated, intelligent information so that we reduce the noise, drive actionable intelligence, and really automate as much as possible. Because again, these attacks have gone beyond human comprehension. So when you have so much happening in a large surface area, You need automation, you need intelligence.
Vijay, one of the things that amazes me is you not only can pick out given hackers, and you name your conference rooms of hackers that you've caught and balanced it on it, but you showed me very early on how it was very difficult to fake out voice, and you showed it with examples of very famous people, either the president of the United States or key people that were known in other categories, and you were able to pick out the segment of their voice that was artificially put in out of a whole speech on it. How do you address the deepfake issues that are going on? And candidly, unfortunately, I think they're just getting started. Your thoughts?
Yeah. So deepfake is a huge problem, and it's a huge tsunami waiting to happen. There's a lot of good reasons for deepfakes, right? Like if you actually think about when you're speaking to your Alexa or your Google Home, it's actually a synthesized voice that's responding to you. So it is a deepfake in some regards because it is synthesizing a human's voice. But, you know, the fact that you're now starting to see deepfakes that are actually targeting, for example, financial institutions. There's one in particular where a deepfake was actually used to steal $35 million. So it's not a small amount, it's a massive amount. You're also starting to see deepfakes in the political spectrum. You're starting to see it like there was a attempted coup in Gabon based on the fact that their president, a deepfake of his, was released. And so you're starting to see that. You know, a lot of people probably remember the Nancy Pelosi slurred speech. That's not a deep fake. That's a cheap fake, right? Like that's just you slowing it down. But you're starting to see things become more and more significant. And this is where you have to rely on what makes us human. And so what we typically do is, because when you're looking at audio, every single second of audio, even in the lowest fidelity channel, has 8,000 samples of your voice. So what we do is we look at those 8,000 samples every single second and look at how physically are you able to create these voices. And therefore, you start realizing that these deepfakes, even though they sound good to your ear, and your ear is one of the signals that can very easily be fooled because your mind is trying to look at a pattern. And so even though your ear is picking up, maybe there's something off, your mind tries to convince you that, no, it's actually Elon Musk or it is, you know, someone else who's actually on this Zoom video. It is where you use algorithms to determine, was this something that a human could have actually said? And this is where you talked about, you know, our conference rooms. We name conference rooms after every fraudster we catch. There's a conference room named Giraffe Man. And Giraffe Man is actually a fraudster who uses deepfakes to actually synthesize voices. And when you look at the audio coming from that fraudster, you start seeing the way they've produced this voice could have only been produced by a 7-foot-long vocal cord. And so no human has 7-foot-long vocal cords, because that means you needed 7-foot-long neck. And that's why he's called Giraffe Man. And so that's where starting to use algorithms to determine when, you know, there are physical limitations that you of over 10,000 years of human evolution have created, those machines are not able to quite keep up to. And so you're using those to detect these things. And that's how we found the 50 seconds of deepfake on Anthony Bourdain's Roadrunner documentary, which was 2 hours long. And we found the 50 seconds of deepfake. And there's a very interesting Wired article about that. But those are the kinds of techniques you need to use.
You know, Mike, when you think about it, one of the hardest issues we have going is, for many of the people listening today, is how do you develop products for government who perhaps need it the most, security in the industry, et cetera. And theoretically, you develop the products for government and then you bring it into the private sector. Share with the group some of the lessons learned on selling to government, because we all understand the long cycles. If it takes 5 years to make a decision, you do the RFP and you don't implement the decision in volume 5 years, it's already too late. What lessons learned have you got out of this? And I want to level set everyone, it is really hard. I've been in government for 40 years, and it's the hardest vertical on issues like this that are moving very fast. And yet the process on decisions were deliberately slowed down originally so they didn't make mistakes. Lessons learned from your side?
John, there's so many. So number one, I'd just reiterate what you already shared, which is if you're selling to government and trying to solve their problems, you should expect it to take a long time because of the factors that you mentioned. Number two, it feeds the first point, is when you're dealing with the government, you have to look at certifications. And so there are, for example, our work with government, we have to be FIPS certified on our crypto, NTSWG, the National Telecommunications Security Working Group, on our overall device protection. You need to be FedRAMP certified for your cloud. You have NIAP certifications for your VPN tunnels. You have, you literally go on and on. And it's a trend that I think you're only going to see more NIST frameworks and government regulatory standards that are applied to all industries. So there's value in all of these certifications, but they take time, right? They're very rigorous and take resources and effort to get through. The other thing is the supply chain. So SolarWinds on the software supply chain is one that most people are familiar with, but the hardware supply chain, there also are many attacks. And if you want to sell to sensitive government agencies, you need to look at your entire supply chain and be able to validate that it's secure. For example, in our world, we have to build our stuff in an ITAR certified facility in the United States. And then working with some of our sensitive, you know, agencies, they shared that foreign nation states can still get people hired in those types of facilities. So we ended up putting air gap safes inside those types of facilities that no one who works there can actually open. And that's how you do certain types of key provisioning. So all of this adds up to, you know, it's really important. We all depend on the government to provide critical services to us. So there's real value in helping our government be more secure. And so there's value in pursuing it, but you have to be patient to work with them. And the bar is very high.
And I guess one of the things that I've kind of learned as an investor too is encouraging my companies to have both a government focus, but also an enterprise business focus, given that sometimes the government can be slow and you can work on projects for years before you know if you're going to be able to break them or not. Next question, in today's market, and I'm not talking about a specific point in time, but the second half of this year, clearly technology companies have slowed dramatically in terms of their sales. We've all seen the challenges in the stock market, et cetera, over the last year. But cybersecurity for areas that are truly strategic actually are accelerating. So the question for each of you, is your growth accelerating? And since you're not a public company, give me an idea of your growth rate. So if I can, Vijay, maybe ask you first. Now, what do you want to talk about the focus of cybersecurity as it relates to your movement to the cloud? How fast is your cloud cybersecurity business growing, and is it accelerating at this time?
Yeah, absolutely, John. You know, that's one of the most exciting things. You know, ever since we moved from, you know, on-premise to cloud, that cloud security business is right now growing at 70% and over a pretty large base. And so, you know, you're starting to see that acceleration. And it's really interesting that, you know, we deal with the largest of the large. If you can think of one particular sector that's really hard to please, it's financials, it's folks like healthcare, it's folks like insurance. And for the longest time, they were very resistant to the cloud, but that's changed. That's changed in a massive way. And so we're taking advantage of those tailwinds, and we're starting to see it grow in incredible ways. And it's because you're able to create very clear ROIs for your you know, for the customers that you're providing. When your customers are looking at saying, okay, how much fraud am I actually stopping? And the fact that they can tie every single fraud dollar lost to a call where with Pindrop, they would have saved that dollar from going out the window. And without Pindrop, they won't save that. And then the second part of it is the customer experience. I'm asking my customers to spend all of that time, close to 2 minutes, answering all of these questions. I can get rid of that. And per second that I get rid of, I'm saving 2.5 cents. Those are the kinds of things due to which they're saying, okay, you know what? Over these 10 million calls, I'm able to save 18 million in hard, either fraud losses or handle time savings or customer experience savings. And therefore, I'm starting to say, okay, you know, now that I am willing to send all of this information to the cloud, because the cloud is real and everyone is moving to the cloud, I'm starting to invest in cybersecurity products that allow me to protect an entire channel, a channel that wasn't protected ever before. And so we're starting to see some incredible growth in that cloud security practice.
Mike, you're in an early stage, just starting to cross the chasm, but a little bit in terms of your growth and the market segment that you're serving, where are you in terms of the nine-inning ballgame in terms of the opportunity? And what I'm after is for the viewers to understand cybersecurity, if your products are really, really strategic to their purchasing agent groups, is accelerating because they realize it's only a matter of time before the next hack or the rogue negligence issue or a disgruntled employee hitting issues. What are you seeing?
Yeah, so again, we start from a smaller base than Vijay and Bipul. So I'm comfortable committing 100%, a triple digit growth rate for next year. But it's easier to say that on a small base. The reason for that, if you think about
1,000,
John, I know better than to answer that question on a recorded call. So the thing that's interesting for us is that if you think about the primary use case, there are literally hundreds of thousands of government workers who are required to leave their mobile phone in the glove box of their car or in a storage locker before they walk into work. And that creates enormous challenges from a recruiting, retention, productivity, morale perspective, right? Especially for younger generation who have these things surgically attached to their hands, right? The mobile phones. And so they don't want to work at places like that. And then it's now becoming a national security issue because the government needs to take advantage of technologies like 5G. But if the devices that use that 5G are banned from the workplace or the battlefield, what are you going to do? So because of that, I'd say we're really in the first inning of where Provoro can be because we're really the only solution in the marketplace right now that's solved this problem.
Bipul, you're the largest of the groups and you're on a tremendous run rate. You did reposition the company and then actually accelerating. What can you share with the group on what you're seeing? And I know that you might be closer to looking in the future about maybe going public, but growth numbers that you can share with us, and is it accelerating?
Cyber market continues to be strong because even on a weaker economy, folks want to protect their business, and cyber is a risk mitigation like protecting the business kind of a sale or purchase. So we continue to see significant demand. We continue to grow strongly. We recently announced that we crossed $400 million in ARR, doubling year over year with NRR greater than 140%. So our business continues to be strong. We see a strong demand. And as obviously no company is completely immune to macro environments, but so far we are not seeing significant impact.
I think it goes back to the strategicness, not just cybersecurity products, but the strategicness of your solution and the immediate need. And if I were giving advice to a young person going into business or engineering school at the present time, I'd say major in cybersecurity and artificial intelligence. And pardon me, you'll have job security the rest of your life. But it does speak the opportunities here. See, my sense of humor is getting even better. And it was fun watching all three of you answer that growth issue in a way that we've talked about over time on how much you share or don't share. You're getting very good at it. You won't need me as your coach in the distant, not too distant future. But when you talk about lessons learned, and maybe this is the last closing question, I could go on for another hour, and I'm learning, and I will take notes on some of your comments afterwards when I listen to it a second time. But if there's one lesson learned in management, so this is more of a leadership question. If there's one lesson learned in leadership that you now understand and are attempting to master and control that you wish you had learned as a much younger leader, sharing it with the audience, what would that be and why? Let me go in reverse order. I'll go Bipul, then Mike, and then Vijay, the last comment.
One lesson learned in building Rubrik the last 9 years have been, as an immigrant, as somebody with like no business background, you always want to rely on your own strengths, and you don't easily believe that a partnership with some other larger company would really create a business momentum for you. And I always believe that we have to control our own destiny and drive it from our own strength. And that was a lesson learned, because have creating a partnership and ecosystem helps put the word out there. Customers have more places that they're hearing Rubrik's name, not just from our own sales team or our own company. And that's something that that we understood, that we went too far on our own strength journey, and then we turned around and created ecosystem partnership that has really accelerated our business.
I would agree. I think it's one of the most fundamental. If you're trying to lead a field, to lead it without a very strong partnership ecosystem is impossible. And learning that early, both how to do it right and how to avoid the pitfalls, is key. Mike, a lesson learned that you wish you'd learned earlier in life, other than your fly fishing, me showing you how to present the fly better versus rainbow trout, what would be the second lesson?
I've got a long way to go on the fly fishing, John, as you well know. On the business side, two things jump out. One is team and culture. I think that, you know, you get the right people and you put them in the right environment and they work together, magic can happen. And if you don't, it doesn't matter how good the idea, you'll never realize your potential. So that's number one. And on the technology side, I think the big lesson I've learned is that regardless of the technical elegance of your solution, if you don't address user experience, it doesn't matter. And so that's really important, because people will bypass security if it's inconvenient and or has high friction. So that's the other big thing that I would share.
Gotcha. Vijay, kind of bring us home.
Yeah, I'm going to pick an area. I mean, both of those areas are great and very well said, you know, the team and culture. The thing that I'd pick is, given the economic downturn, I think, you know, one of the things is most founders are very positive and very resilient. They're always trying to find the silver lining in something to actually go on to the next big thing. But one of the things that I've learned over Pindrop's life is to understand when, you know, the economy is going bad or you yourself have self-inflicted wounds, and then ripping the Band-Aid and preparing your company, whatever is happening, quickly, rather than staying in denial. And that helps you do things, helps you come out of that that downturn much, much quicker, right? Like when the pandemic happened, we were one of the first people to, you know, essentially start working from home. When we started seeing the economy tottering, we started focusing on renewals and focusing, we created a renewal tiger team, but that was against my grain of thought, which is I was always focused on the positive. Realizing things are going bad and that you have no control over, focusing on what you can control and starting to plan that early was probably the biggest lesson. And, you know, John, you have been a big part of that lesson, right? Learning how to plan ahead of time and ripping the Band-Aid early, as opposed to waiting for things to unfold themselves. I think that's a super important lesson.
And just for the viewership, you've executed it remarkably well, this last challenge. So we all learn from it. It's something we don't like to go through, but being able to deal with that and do it in a very crisp and a replicatable fashion is key. I want to thank you each. I want to thank you, Vijay, Mike, and Bipul, for one of the best sessions we've done and taking the time. It means the world to me and to our listeners. For our listeners, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Please take time to rate the Chamber's talks and what you like about this session and what we could do better. And I look forward to hearing from all of you in the next session. Be safe, everyone. And thank you once again for joining us today.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you, John.